Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to TNT, today's News Talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you so much for joining us this week. It is a gorgeous Thursday. I'm here on the South Coast. We are broadcasting live from the beautiful and vibrant city of Brighton in England, in the United Kingdom, on the South Coast. I'm going to be joined in studio by none other than Basil Valentine in just a few minutes, probably at the top of the hour, somewhere around there. He will make his way here in good time. Basil always takes his time. Very, very casual down here. Beautiful beach. The weather's great. The Brighton Fringe Festival is on for really the next month. So the city is really buzzing down here. Very pleased to be able to be joined by Basil. And also, I'm going to be joined by an extremely special guest, I believe, the first time on our show on TNT, F. William Engdahl, the best-selling author, the geopolitical analyst of note. We're a great fan of his work, of course, and he's going to be joining us probably in the second hour to talk about the WHO, the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty. Everybody's talking about this. This is one of the big issues. This would give pretty much carte blanche for this unelected supranational NGO stroke organization privately funded by the Bill Gates Foundation, by the U.S. government, by the Chinese government, and a few others, would give them basically authority over your government, wherever you are, whatever country you're in. If your country signs up for this treaty, they will effectively be in a binding agreement that they will take instructions from the WHO. And the WHO will determine whether there's a pandemic on and what the mitigation measures will be. I cannot tell you how dangerous and how historically bad this would be if this comes to pass. So we're going to break this down. Miles of Truth is also going to be joining us in a few minutes. And that we're looking forward to that. Obviously, Miles has got some information on the WHO pandemic treaty as well. So we will be focusing on that issue for a large part of the program today. The reason being is because I just think this is such an important issue. So we're going to do our best to get our best minds and best people on the show to flesh through this story. And then the third hour will be basically freelancing here, riding with Basil Valentine, riding shotgun with me in studio. We'll be covering a number of stories internationally. We've got a few interesting things going on, so we'll be chewing the fat. That should be a lot of fun in the third hour with Basil sitting next to me in our makeshift road studio. Very proud and pleased to be taking TNT on the road. So we're looking forward to getting deeply into all the most important stories internationally. Now, one of the big stories that has broken in the last 24 hours, which I want to bring your attention to, the United Nations Secretary General Gutierrez, Antonio Gutierrez, he has basically said the unsayable. He's saying that Russian food and fertilizers must have unrestricted access to world markets. If you want to read the statement, we published it at full at 21stCenturyWire.com. This is the official statement from the United Nations. So this is the Secretary General saying this, and basically saying, if we don't feed the people, we feed the conflict. All I'm going to say is this. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can break this issue down. But, like, where was this statement 2 months ago, right? When the mother of all sanctions was imposed, and our leaders, our political leaders in the West, in their infinite wisdom, we know they have so much of it. They decided, hey, let's embargo the world's biggest basket commodity producer, Russia. Let's embargo them. But we're back here, you know, in our modest position in alternative media, independent media. We're screaming, waving our hands, you know, sending up flares. We're saying, hold on, wait a minute. Russia's the world's, you know, arguably the world's number one fertilizer producer. Potash, fertilizer, wheat, grains, a whole bunch of other things. Not even talking about natural gas and oil. Although that's hit the market pretty hard because of sanctions. But just the food security issue. And not just food for humans. We're talking about food for livestock. Okay? Livestock food. Places like Africa, Sudan, Ethiopia. Okay, we're screaming. We're saying, wait, you don't want to embargo Russia. This is not a good idea. You don't want to sanction all their banks. You could have a massive disaster on your hands financially, in terms of fuel prices, in terms of the viability of agricultural products, food, globally. And it happened. So all the geniuses, all our political geniuses, sat back and let this disaster unfold while they were all patting themselves on the back for sending a strong message to Vladimir Putin. Right? Isn't that what happened? Well, that's what happened. So now, 2 months later, UN SecGen is basically saying, whoa, hold on, hit the brakes. You know, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. So here we are. We published a statement up here. They're saying that Russia needs to allow Ukraine's grain to flow. They have overland transport routes into Europe across Poland. They're saying, well, it's not enough. Look, if it's enough, if the overland routes are enough for all of the NATO member states to be trafficking arms and weapons into Ukraine nonstop since before the conflict, or the beginning of the conflict, let's say, from let's say March 1st, okay? If they can do that nonstop and they've got, like, they're throwing around 20, 10, 20, 30, 40 billion for weapons for the comedian in Kiev, and they're saying it's problematic to be sending grain and shipping food via Poland. Poland's got a pretty good port facility there in Gdansk, okay? One of the biggest, most capable ports probably in Europe. Okay. What's the problem? You got no problem with the weapons, the explosives, the howitzers, right? The tanks, they're coming in droves into Ukraine, but we can't send the food the other way. And here's the other issue. Okay. In terms of volume of grains, agricultural products, et cetera, you know, the majority of that is in Russian-held territory right now in Ukraine, the eastern part of the country. That's the majority of it. So if you want that to flow, if you want that to get to the world's markets, then let Russia take it. Simple as that. Okay? They're saying, no, they need to lift the blockade at Odessa. I'm wondering if that's a ruse. If that's a ruse, because NATO would love to have that as an active port to be shipping in fighters, NATO officers, specialists, weapons, arms, who knows what. It's a war zone, ladies and gentlemen. NATO has said we're at war with Russia. The U.S. has said we're at war with Russia. Britain's more or less said we're at war with Russia. It's war. So if you want a war, this is what the fallout looks like. And if you're in the West, you're going to have to own it. You can't blame it all on Putin and blame it all on Russia. And I can tell you exactly what the narrative is going to be. The narrative is going to be, oh, the Russians are responsible for a global famine. The Russians are responsible for a global famine. And they won't let Ukraine's grain flow via Odessa. Okay, there's plenty of other options to make it happen. Yes, it would be more convenient and you'd have another port access if Mariupol and if Odessa were running on full strength. Yes, in normal situations, absolutely. But they've had 2 weeks to sort this one, or sorry, 2 months, over 2 months to sort this one out. What, 3 months practically? Nearly 3 months to sort this one out and to foresee this, but that wasn't their priority. Their priority was guns, because they thought, oh, we can create a new Vietnam here for Russia to get bogged down in. This will be their Afghanistan, just like the Soviets got bogged down in Afghanistan. Like, these two things are are you know, comparable. They're not. They're not even comparable. But they've got their narrative. They're sticking to their plan, and now everybody's panicking. They're panicking, saying, "Oh no." And they're going to blame Putin, and they're going to blame Russia. They're not going to take any responsibility for it. This is what these people have done from the beginning. This is what they did prior to Russia's military intervention in Ukraine for 8 years. Europe, the U.S., Britain sat on their hands and kept stum about the massacres in Donbass, kept stum about the Minsk Accords the whole time, working actively to sabotage and undermine the Minsk peace process, which was mandated by the UN Security Council. Yes, that UN Security Council endorsed the Minsk protocols and said, make it happen. Germany, France were drafted in to help, you know, convince Kiev to implement the Minsk protocols. They did nothing. They did nothing. And now they're all screaming, oh, the Russians invaded. The Russians invaded the U.S. Everybody's screaming, shouting like hysterical maniacs. We need to send in more weapons, more arms for Zelensky. So here we are, potential global disaster regarding food. You got to be kidding me. How stupid do they think we are? Honestly, it's hard to have the patience. It's hard to have the patience to humor this much longer. So we've also got another story up on 21st Century Wire, which you want to take a look at. It's an analysis by Dr. Joseph Mercola. And it's about the meat shortage. Are you ready for the meat shortage? Are you ready for the meat shortage? Here's the summary. The globalist takeover is coming at us from every possible angle. Whether we're talking about biosecurity, finance, housing, healthcare, energy, transportation, or food, very important food. All the changes we're now seeing have one goal, and that is to force compliance with a totalitarian slave system. The global food system and protein sources in particular are currently under coordinated and intentional attacks, trying to prevent the manufacture of food and engineering shortages and ultimately famine. Globalist elite intend to eliminate traditional farming and livestock and replace it with indoor-grown produce and lab-created protein alternatives that they will own and they will control. And if you think that's a conspiracy theory, you're not listening and not looking at the things which Bill Gates is sinking billions and billions into, whether it's the fake meat, whether it's the fake breast milk, whatever. And now we've got, lo and behold, we've got a food crisis. Oh, and it just happened. It was just an act of God. Well, it was a combination of an act of God and an act of Vladimir Putin. That's what we're being told. It's the same bankrupt argument that they're using. It's their policies, their sanctions. They knew what was going to happen. And if they didn't, they can't be that stupid. Really, they can't be that stupid. But they're wanting to scapegoat it on some external remote person that we're supposed to channel all of our anger at and get behind a World War III type scenario. No, thank you. Mercola continues, while the presence of hundreds of food brands gives the appearance of market competition, the reality is that the food industry is monopolized by fewer than a dozen companies. Mainly talking about North America here. And all of them in turn are largely owned by two behemoths, BlackRock and Vanguard funds, own everything. Eventually, your ability to buy food will be tied to your digital identity and your social credit score unless you start taking active measures right now. And I'm not going to sell you storable foods or Patriot foods or anything like that. I'm sure if you're all adults, you can figure out what needs to happen next. Okay. especially if you've got a little bit of land, even a back garden. Okay, it's not difficult. It's not rocket science. If you've got a back garden, if you've got a little bit of land, you got to start thinking about growing your own food, build a chicken coop. Not difficult, not expensive, and a whole lot of fun. That's the starting point, ladies and gentlemen. And also, you got to audit your diet. You got to audit how you're spending your money on food. And you got to come up with a game plan. And that game plan has to be tied to nutrition, has to be tied to sustainability. If you're able to do those things, you're going to ride out this storm. You're going to ride out this crisis. But rest assured, these people are not giving up with their Great Reset. They're not giving up with their new normal. They've got a lot of money. They're throwing everything at it. They're ideologically driven. And they're sort of functioning psychopaths as well. Too much money and not enough common sense and absolutely power hungry. That's what you're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you got to be careful about. Look, we're going to switch gears and go to the WHO pandemic treaty after the break. Miles of Truth is going to join us on the line. Stick around. We'll be right back.
We wear the PPE and wade through the muck so you don't have to. Never miss our thought-provoking take on the latest news and current affairs. Take TNT Radio wherever you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
This is the sound of a generation rising above. The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow. You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Welcome to the latest edition of Who Wants to Be Prime Minister? That's right, today it's Albo versus ScoMo. Who will be the first to stuff it all up?
Price of bread, $3.50. Cash rate, 0.1%.
All right, let's go, Albo.
Anthony Albanese, welcome to the show. How are you? Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks. You're good. 13% of the nation is living under the poverty line, and you're good. Oh, sorry. I didn't know we'd started. He didn't even know we'd started. He's not ready. He's not prepared.
I'm prepared.
And Scott Morrison, how are you?
Well, Andrew, I'm busy. Working day and night for all Australians. Unlike Take It Easy Albanese over here.
Devastating first round for Albo. ScoMo is in his element here. Just look at the way he works the media. They're eating out of the palm of his hands.
Albo, what's the current unemployment rate?
Well, the national unemployment rate at the moment is
Mr. Morrison?
Jobs. Oh, come on, that's not an answer.
All right, it's time for the speed round.
Albo, how much is it for a 45-minute Thai massage?
$85.65.
Scott, what has four wheels and flies?
A garbage truck.
Albo, what's the surname of the family of Malcolm in the Middle?
Wilkerson.
Scott, why does Michael J. Fox make the best milkshakes?
Well, he uses the finest ingredients.
Albo, what's heavier, a kilogram of bricks or a kilogram of feathers?
Bricks!
Wrong, they both weigh the same, you f***ing idiot! And Scott Morrison is the winner! Right, that's it! This was supposed to be an easy win for me, and you're all making me look like a bloody idiot. How about instead of trying to trip us up and ask us dumb questions, you ask me some proper questions about our policies?
What's Labor's policy on Australian coal mining?
Mr. Morrison? Okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
To find out more, visit onenation.org.au.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else.
It gives you some awareness of what's really going on.
Where things are at, even around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, today's news talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you so much for rejoining us. We're really excited with the program we've got today. We're going to be joined in studio in a few minutes by none other than Basil Valentine. We're set up here in Brighton on the South Coast. The Brighton Fringe Festival is going on. The city is absolutely buzzing. The weather's beautiful. What a great time to be down in this part of the world. But also, we've got some serious issues to tackle as well. We will talk about the WHO World Health Organization's pandemic treaty more also in the second hour with our guest, F. William Engdahl, who's just penned an article, actually just this morning, which is up at New Eastern Outlook. The headline is WHO's stealth coup to dictate global health agenda of Gates, Big Pharma. And to help us kind of break down this issue of the WHO pandemic treaty, a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are concerned about it, and with good reason, because this is unprecedented. And if you are one of those who are slightly disturbed about what's gone on over the last 2 years with regards to the global pandemic, i.e. COVID-19, then you want to tune in and listen closely to what we're going to be talking about today. On the line right now, our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth. Very pleased to be joining, to be joined by Miles. Hello, Miles.
Hey, Patrick. Thanks for having me again.
No, it's great to be back. Thank you. It's been a little bit of a hiatus. We haven't talked to you in a while. We're very happy to reconnect, Miles. And firstly, how have you been? And tell us more about this issue with the WHO pandemic treaty.
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. It's a big week coming up for the globalists. This week, starting on Sunday, we have both the World Economic Forum, Davos annual shindig starting, and on the same day the World Health Assembly is starting, and they're both obviously World Economic Forum is in Davos, Switzerland, and the World Health Assembly is in Geneva, Switzerland. So both of them begin in Switzerland on the same day. And the one of the things people are talking about right now is this the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty. However, I would say that I think there's a bit of confusion, because I think two things are getting conflated together in people's thoughts here. The pandemic treaty itself is actually still being drafted. It was only conceived of back in December. And it's not expected to be presented for any votes or anything until 2 years from now, in 2024. So it's hard to say. I mean, I do expect that will generally strengthen the, you know, global biosecurity measures and so forth. But we don't really have any specifics about it yet because it's not been presented. However, there's a second thing that's also happening, and that's happening now, which is amendments drafted by the United States and submitted to the, I believe submitted to the World Health Organization to change what's called the IHR, the International Health Regulations. Now, these were drafted in 2005. 196 countries. All the members of the World Health Organization agreed to them. So they're already in force. But what we're talking about now is changes to them that are suggested by the U.S. This is a different thing than the pandemic treaty, as I said. But what's more urgent about this in a lot of people's mind is that it's actually these amendments are about to be voted on, I believe, during this upcoming World Health Assembly next week.
Okay.
So really, if anything is to avert this course to, have this voted in, and it is expected to be voted in, we only have a few days to do it, for what that's worth. But anyway, the changes that are in these amendments, I've actually just read them all this morning. It's kind of subtle, but it's pretty clear if you look closely. I mean, it does kind of generally strengthen all the biosecurity arrangements, but particularly to do with the declaration of pandemics or public health emergencies. And sort of the communication and the back and forth between national governments and the World Health Organization. Significantly, and this is one of the clearest things in it, I think, is that it pretty much gives the World Health Organization's Director General unilateral ability to declare pandemics.
Wow.
Yeah, and then also it strengthens the World Health Organization's ability to dictate what countries do in the event of a pandemic. So it gives the Director General quite a bit of power. And one of the changes was that it used to be, before these amendments, it was the Director General would have to consult with the country in question, and only then could they declare a public health emergency. But now it's just with the amendment, it's down to just the Director General alone.
So the WHO, the WHO can declare a pandemic, and then they don't have to necessarily consult with the local health authorities in the country of question of the alleged outbreak. They can just do it at the central node there at the WHO HQ run by Dr. Tedros. And then they instruct the country as to what to do next. In other words, they're not sovereign anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if there's, it's almost a trick question because, like I said, these regulations have been in force since 2007, the existing ones. So we're already, all the nations that are part of the World Health Organization have already agreed to do whatever the WHO, you know, decides in these matters. But it's just, this is just really nailing it down and making it more sort of unilateral. But yeah, I mean, you could say the sovereignty already went when we agreed to this back in 2005.
I think the big issue here, Miles, is this. One of the big issues is if this is codified as a treaty, that's one of the highest forms of international law enforcement. In other words, you know, you've got agreements, you've got accords, but treaty is in fact the highest. So that's binding, you know, and it compels people to act in accordance to what is in the treaty. And I think that's one of the big differences than the regulations or the recommendations that are already in the existing framework of the WHO. So that could be, upgrading that initial framework that you mentioned from 2005, right? This effectively, it looks like, Miles, it kind of upgrades it to that top level of international compliance.
Well, like I said, with the treaty, which is a separate thing from what I was just talking about, the international health regulations, the treaty hasn't actually been drafted yet. So I believe with what they have published and voted on and decided so far, they haven't even said what form it will take. They have just said some type of international instrument, but they haven't said whether it would be a treaty or a convention or, you know, and so on. It could be any of them. They haven't actually decided yet, I believe.
We'll ask William Engdahl more on those legal specifics in the next hour. So I'll definitely probe him on what he knows about that side of things. But anyway, continue, Miles. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said, there's some confusion here. I do think it is confusing that not only that they're doing these two separate things, and it's getting sort of conflated in people's minds that the pandemic treaty, or that's what it's being referred to, and these international health regulations. The treaty is, like I said, it's still being drafted, and the votes on it are not going to be for another couple of years. But the IHR amendments are to be voted on, next week sometime. I expect both of them will just generally tighten biosecurity measures and so on. But it's also confusing because this thing people are saying about, oh, we're giving away our sovereignty and decision-making ability to the World Health Organization. It's contradicted, of course, by the fact checkers who are now out saying, no, 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 it's not going to affect sovereignty. Even if it did, the WHO has no power to enforce it anyway. So I am reading those things, but I frankly just, I don't know.
Do you trust the fact checkers, Miles?
Hell no.
I didn't think
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's, like I said, it is complicated and everything about it is shrouded in sort of legalese, globalese, as Mark Anderson calls it.
Oh, yeah.
This That's boring a good word. Sort of legal corporate speak with all these layers of bureaucracy and different assemblies and votes and committees and different bodies and things. And it all passes through all these different layers. That's just so utterly boring to like read through the details of. It's a task just to see what they're talking about, really. But yeah, I do think the pandemic treaty is a ways off, but it probably will be worrisome when it starts to take shape. And it specifically says it's going to involve not just the World Health Organization, but also the World Bank, the IMF, the World Trade Organization. So you can see the question of whether, you know, we're watching a world government form here. I don't think there's much of a question anymore. It's pretty clear based on things like this that's what's happening.
Well, that's interesting you mentioned that, Miles, the involvement of the World Bank, the IMF. I can see a situation, Miles, especially for countries that are getting financial assistance from the IMF in terms of loans, that one of the conditions of receiving the loans and one of the conditions of their agreement with the World Bank, the IMF, is that they're going to be in full compliance with the WHO pandemic guidelines and instructions. I can see that as being a major requirement. So the only people who would be able to push back on that, Miles, would probably be countries that have sort of a very high degree of national sovereignty. The ones I'll name are probably North Korea, Russia at the moment, possibly China, but I don't think so, because China seems to be heavily invested into the WHO. They're a bit of a funny paradox there. And maybe the United States, under a different administration, they might take a dip. Donald Trump left the WHO halfway through his term. So,
yeah.
And then Biden's brought them back in, obviously. So that's an interesting one. So I think this is the hook. And the more countries that are suffering economically, the timing of this, Miles, is, you know, the IMF's there to rescue basically lots of people. And within that rescue process, there's going to be, you're going to have to do X, Y, and Z. Otherwise, we're going to withhold this $4 billion. We're going to withhold this $10 billion, whatever. That, I think I can see that working through this, Miles.
Yes, absolutely. And in terms of what were you just saying about, you know, enforcing or bringing countries into compliance, these amendments to the IHR, the International Health Regulations, they do say that once they come into force, once they're agreed, they come into force 6 months later. But it's been added that after this 6 month point, no rejection or reservation can be considered. So
really?
It means that, yeah, I think what that means is that if 6 months pass after a country has agreed to it, that they cannot, after that point, argue with anything the World Health Organization decides under these rules.
That's potentially a big red flag, Miles, there.
Yeah, also it says that if, and this is one of the last things in these amendments, it says if a country has trouble adjusting legislatively, so if they can't bring their own laws into compliance with these regulations, or if they have trouble, it just says they need to report it to World Health Organization and achieve them within 12 months. So it doesn't even allow for the legislative sort of decision to go against these rules. It just says within 12 months you will achieve the changes, you know.
Wow, that sounds a lot like a global government framework creeping in. Miles, look, we're going to take a short break here. I'm with Miles of Truth. We're going in deep into the WHO pandemic treaty and trying to pull this apart and find out what's going on here. We'll be back after these messages with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
If there is one issue in this election which should be the central feature, it should be the federal government's response to COVID and how the nation can avoid such a disastrous and tragic response in future. But the major parties are intent on pushing the false narrative and play the tune of their big business financial sponsors, which include big pharma companies profiting at Australia's expense. A few days ago we saw, disgustingly I might add, Labor leader Anthony Albanese dodge a simple question on vaccine mandates from a member of the public. "When are you going to put our workers back to work without mandates?" a woman asked. And all Albanese said was, be polite," and scurried away. And Prime Minister Scott Morrison is keen to sign away Australia's sovereignty in healthcare to our WHO treaty. We can do much better. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
No matter the challenges I face every day in the NFL, my mom is always there for me, despite her own struggles with muscular dystrophy. Learn how the Muscular Dystrophy Association is helping find cures and save lives at helpmda.org. Thank you.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Who is Klaus Schwab and what is the World Economic Forum which he leads? Just quoting Klaus Schwab is alarming enough. If he and his billionaire friends achieve their Great Reset, tyranny would be the new world order. Born in Ravensburg, Germany in 1938, Klaus Schwab is a child of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich, a political state regime built on fear and violence, on brainwashing and control, on propaganda and lies. While the Nazis desired a new order for Germany that would last 1,000 years, Klaus Schwab's vision extends globally and would potentially be unstoppable were nations to relinquish all sovereignty and adopt the neurotechnologies and biotechnologies which forces us, in the words of Klaus Schwab, to question what it means to be human.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. We're into the first hour here on the line with Miles of Truth, a research assistant for the show. And we're getting into trying to pick apart and deconstruct the WHO pandemic treaty. What we've seen so far initially, at least the premise behind this, is hugely alarming. It has massive implications going forward. If you didn't like what you experienced over the last 2 years with the COVID-19 so-called global pandemic, I'm guessing you're not going to like what is in this treaty. And just in generally where this issue is going, where this is being elevated to sort of a global government level in terms of it sitting above national governments and decision-making, and really a future whereby countries might not actually be the masters of their own destiny if a organization like the WHO decides to declare a global pandemic, whatever that pandemic is, take your guess, take your pick. We've talked about some of the prospective candidates for what Bill Gates calls the next pandemic. We've broken down those on previous episodes. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But Miles, basically this kind of puts, if I'm getting this right, Miles, this WHO pandemic treaty is potentially a binding agreement, and it kind of puts teeth, it gives teeth to the WHO maybe that it didn't quite have before. It's just an additional, a bit of additional leverage, additional authority. And that leaves me with one question, Miles. You know, do I trust the determinations and the claims made by the WHO? Do the people that fund them, do the people that support them, that make that organization run, what is their agenda? This is a good question. Is it the same as everyone else's? Do they have everyone else's interests at heart? Or are we looking at the embryonic building blocks of a global government here? Go ahead, Miles.
Yeah, I mean, I have the exact same concerns. I don't think there's much of a mystery there. I mean, I do think the World Health Organization is largely captured already. You only have to look at Bill Gates, his foundation's funding of the World Health Organization is already, I believe he has been the second leading funder behind the U.S. in past years. That's just the foundation. But if you combine Gavi, which is also his project, which is the immunization.
The Global Vaccine Alliance, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So they make sure vaccines get into all the different third world countries and around everywhere. So they also are a leading funder of the World Health Organization, but that itself is a Bill Gates project. I believe he founded it. So he really is, has a lot of money into it. And if you look at the background of Dr. Tedros, the director general, he seems to have come out of the Gates sort of machine. He's had several posts where, I believe with the foundation and related organizations, and he does seem to be a creature of Bill Gates to me. But you know, this is just talking about Gates. There's other interests that are funding the World Health Organization. Big Pharma also contributes, but not as much as the national governments. But I don't trust the World Health Organization. And just putting the decision-making power like this into one body, into one person at the top of it, is very, very dangerous. Like I said, they're actually weakening the requirements for the countries to be involved in the decisions about whether a pandemic's happening in their country. So they're increasing the requirements to communicate, to report everything to World Health Organization, but not to decide what to do about it. You know, so it clearly is just shifting the power more into their hands and making the WHO more of a hub for all this decision making, whether a pandemic is declared, whether a public health emergency is declared, and what to do about it, all just gets more and more concentrated in their hands.
Yeah, that's the thing that concerns me the most, Miles. And you know, when you look at this issue and you break it down, this is where the real power is. And at three junctures, actually, in the 2000s, with the swine flu pandemic that they declared in 2009, just before that, they had lowered the bar, so to speak, as to, you know, what level the crisis needs to be at in order to declare a global pandemic for the H1N1 crisis. And I believe they did it prior to the announcement of COVID-19 as a global pandemic. They lowered the requirement. And as we know, at the time when they declared a global pandemic for COVID-19, there wasn't that much in terms of, you know, cases or fatalities in China. They just kind of ran with it very early. And it was just this expectation or assumption that this was a sequel to SARS-1 and that we need to declare a global pandemic. And so if they have the power to declare a pandemic, that's where all the power is, Miles. It's all concentrated at that 1-0 point. And so if they have the power to declare a global pandemic, everything else, all the dominoes fall after that. So that's my biggest problem with this. I don't trust them as an organization based on what they've done in the past. And I just see them making it, they're lowering the bar. They continue to lower the bar as to what is a global pandemic. And we have so many lessons to learn from the last one, Miles. We haven't even fully fleshed it out as a society, as a global community. And here they are rushing again to kind of, you know, force this framework into place. I mean, they're really rushing. It's Engdahl calls it a bum rush. It's calling it a bum rush. That's my biggest fear, Miles.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, it's not really being reported in the mainstream. Even I think the independent media is a little behind the ball on this one. But the mainstream for sure. It's hard to find much about this at all, except these fact check articles saying, no, it's not going to affect your sovereignty, which I just, I mean, if you read that first, you might be convinced, but having actually read the amendments and things, I just think that's utter BS. It clearly does affect sovereignty.
These are the same. These are the same fact checkers that told us masks are completely, effective. That the vaccine is 95% effective and safe. And they said that the PCR test is the gold standard of diagnostic tests. And one after the other, they did this. The fact checkers took all those sort of positions and attacked anybody who questioned the gospel on this. And so here they are again. It's kind of predictable, actually. So I really don't know what to say. I mean, Miles, are we at the mercy of the fact checkers now or what?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think a lot of people see through them. But, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who just believe them blindly as well. But yeah, one other thing I want to just mention is, you know, the IHR regulations, this is even before the amendments, which are incoming now, they were used to justify a lot of the measures for the COVID response, such as lockdowns, border closures, vaccine mandates. I mean, for example, Canada, during COVID, they banned unvaccinated people from traveling, boarding planes, or I believe from leaving the country.
Yes.
Crossing the border out of the country. And to justify that, they directly cited these regulations, the IHR regulations.
Wow.
So the fact checker saying, oh, well, you, World Health Organization, don't worry, because they couldn't enforce it, even if they, you know, even if it's true that this, you know, these rules affect your sovereignty, the World Health Organization can't enforce it anyway, because they have no enforcement power. Yeah, but that doesn't matter, because by its nature, the countries agree to this, right? So they agree to it, and then you don't have to enforce it. They're going to enforce it themselves, because that's what they've agreed to do.
That's the most important point, Miles. Isn't that what happened so many times in the last round of pandemonium is that governments, the U.S. government, all of our politicians would go to the podium and they'd say, look, we're following the advice of the experts. Either that's the CDC or it's the WHO. And we believe that they know better than us. We're just politicians. And other governments did the same. Hospitals were even following WHO guidelines on how to record a death from COVID or with COVID or from COVID. And then that generated all the statistics that came from the WHO. So every point, Miles, is what I think that's the point you were making. Our politicians are always deferring when it's convenient to defer to the so-called experts in these organizations.
Yeah.
And that kind of washes their hands of, you know, being responsible. They could just say, oh, we're just following the WHO. They know more than us. That's the problem. That's actually the source of the problem. Because what happens if the experts are wrong, like they were with COVID on so many different aspects of it? Then we all basically we're running up the garden path completely blind and not really accountable. So this is a nightmare, Miles.
Yeah, I have to say I agree. I'm not thrilled with this stuff. But yeah, like you said, they will defer and say, well, our hands are tied because, you know, World Health Organization, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, they leave out, well, they've agreed to these things in the first place. So, yeah, your hands are tied, but maybe you shouldn't have agreed to it if you didn't want your hands to be tied. You know?
Yeah, definitely. that's the irony of this. This is the point. I don't think any country should sign this. No country should sign it. Countries have forums that they can get together and they can compare notes. We have these channels already open. Even if they want to use the WHO, they're open for business. They're there. Why does it have to be formalized in this way? Why does it have to be nailed down this way?
Well, you know, it's all in how they frame it. There's a big sort of, I'm sure there's a huge PR machine all around this stuff that decides very carefully and deliberately how they're going to frame it, how they're going to, you know, what language they're going to use and what rationale they're going to use to give it the best possible chance of getting through. I think it's as simple as that. You know, the true intentions of it and the true results of it may differ hugely from the rhetoric around the campaign to pass it all. I don't have to educate you on that. You look at any of this foreign policy business about liberating Iraq or whatever it is, it's always, that's not really what's going on. You know, I think this is more of the same thing. There's going to be reasons given why it's necessary and a good idea. And I'm sure a lot of these, assembly members from the World Health Assembly are going to believe that stuff, but I wish they would just look a bit closer and think a bit harder about it personally.
Yeah, and also one of the biggest funders of the WHO, who's making basically calling the pandemic, making the decision to call the pandemic, and then laying out the rules of what countries need to do to respond to the pandemic, one of their biggest funders is an organization that was advocating that every man, woman, and child on the planet, 8 billion people, need to be vaccinated against COVID-19. When we know very well that even if you believe the claims about how infectious or deadly COVID-19 is, even by official statistics, that a large portion of the population is not at risk. Talking about young people, we're talking about young, healthy people. We're talking about people, you know, in certain countries by the numbers. So why the need to rush out an experimental pharmaceutical product for every single human on the planet, including babies and expected mothers. That doesn't make any sense at all. I never heard Bill Gates put any caveats on who shouldn't and who should get it. He just basically said 8 billion need to get it. And that's who's funding this organization. So that's big red flag there, Miles. Big red flag.
Yeah, and I must say, when
quickly, we just got 30 seconds, but wrap it up real quick.
Okay, when Dr. Tedros made his announcement of the treaty, that was the primary rationale for what they were doing, that they wanted to drive up vaccination rates and get more people vaccinated. So, yes, absolutely.
There you have it. There you have it. Thank you, Miles of Truth, for joining us this week on TNT. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Patrick.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break. Special guest F. William Engdahl on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. This is TNT, today's news talk. We'll be right back.